Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Thunder Buddies podcast. I'm Eric Horn, here with Brett Dawson.
We keep doing these things late, late night editions.
It's Sam Amick's fault.
It is all Sam Amick's
fault. Darnell Mayberry.
Sam Amick. Darnell Mayberry. We welcome the great Sam Amick of USA Today to the podcast.
Hello, gentlemen.
First time this season.
In studio. This is rare treat for us because we get the... Like Tim Bontemps comes on the phone, but like Tim Bontemps does everybody's
good times
podcast ever. You know, we like Tim, but he's
Tim's giving with his podcast time.
America's podcast guest, yes. as I call him, but always on the phone, so it's nice. Thanks for coming in.
Speaking of nice, as a fan of the Thunder Buddy podcast, you are the nicest podcaster, Brett, that I've ever come across. I listened to the latest one, and it's I love this player. He's a very nice person, but he has flaws in his game.
Yeah, well, you know.
Try to keep it soft. That's good.
You know, sometimes... Actually, I got some people mad at me today on Twitter. I think of myself as nice. Some people thought I was a little mean to nervous Westbrook guy. Because, you know,
mean on what platform?
Well, on Twitter, because after he, you know, nervous Westbrook guy, he started to ask Russell Westbrook a question at Media Day. Today was Media Day.
Right.
And he said, I'm so nervous, come back to me. And he just passed off the mic, right? He's like a young guy. So then he later asks a question of Nick Collison. He gets the whole question out. It was great. And I said, nervous Westbrook guy just got through a whole question.
I saw that.
To Nick Collison. We have a Media Day success story. And people thought I was mocking him. I was happy for him.
People on Twitter like to crap on you just to crap on you for no apparent reason whatsoever.
I might go with the fans on that one. I feel like that's like guy goes 0 for 15 shooting and you're like, hey, he hit a shot.
Well, he got the question out. I was proud of him.
I was proud of him. And I loved his tweet. Did you see his retweet?
He's going to make a comeback. He's boldly stating that he was going to make a comeback. I just, you know, there were probably people watching. They didn't know that the guy who had said that to Nick Collison was the same guy who had frozen up on the Russell Westbrook.
Listen,
just making sure
I don't ever hate on anybody.
Maybe he did because maybe he said it.
I got popped in that very same room. You guys probably remember in the playoffs when I asked Pop a question. And thought we had a real connection and a chemistry, and I got the classic Pop treatment. So it happened.
I think the best way nowadays to like endear yourself to the public / an athlete is basically just make an ass out of yourself in front of a lot of people, because a lot of people on social media are going to laugh at you, but also a lot of people are going to be like, oh, well, I feel bad for that guy. He tried, and for, to his credit, the kid actually handled it really well. And Russell Westbrook laughed.
He did. No, it wasn't like a negative moment.
He didn't
moment.
Embarrass him. He didn't like, you know, he didn't.
Didn't our friend and colleague, and hopefully I'm not remembering this wrong, but didn't Fred Katz have a fun moment last year?
Fred referred to himself as Fred.
Yes.
Maybe his first, not last
like
year.
First
year,
playoff series.
Yeah, because he moved here like late in the season or in the playoffs.
That was like.
Was that a Russ situation?
It was a Kevin situation.
Yeah.
I think it was maybe Western Conference Finals or one of those rounds. Sam, what are you doing here? What are you doing in town?
You got to ask that, really?
No, I'm asking so you can tell everyone. What are you doing here?
Well,
what stories
it is a good
on?
Question because the obvious answer folks would assume is because they traded for Melo and I just hopped on a plane and got out of here. That's not the case. As you guys know, in this industry, we do not complain when we stumble into good luck every so often. I had something lined up with Paul George to talk to him on Saturday leading into Media Day. And at that point, the focus was just on Paul and what coming to OKC meant and that whole storyline. And so flying in Friday night, rumors start rumbling about Melo and that situation. I think this is harmless enough to share, like Saturday morning, potentially going to connect with Sam Presti to discuss the future of the Thunder. And shockingly, Sam was a little bit busy. He was working the phones and trading for a guy who's been in the All-Star game 10 times. And so the luck is the fact, you know, I talked to Paul on Saturday on the day they traded for Melo. That worked out pretty well. And then I was going to fly out this evening, literally, I think it's 9:15 local time. I would have been about 40 minutes into my flight going home. I'm going to stick around an extra day because these guys are making themselves even more relevant than before.
Sam, I wanted to get your opinion on this because you've written, as you said, you spent some time with Paul George over the weekend. You've written some really good pieces about him leading up to Media Day. And it seems like since Paul has been here, he said a lot of things that have, you know, kind of conveyed that he enjoys it here, he likes it here, he sees this as a place where he can win, and he's going to prioritize winning over, you know, whatever else there is in free agency.
Right.
And you were one of the first people, you might have been the first person to report, you know, way back in the season about the interest in the Lakers. Correct me if I'm wrong on that. I think you might have been.
I feel like it was kind of out there. The entertaining memory for me is that I used the word hellbent in a column. And so I had written a column that said that Paul George had a strong desire to sign with the Lakers, and that didn't really get a lot of traction. And I'm kind of forgetting the details, but somebody the next day had doubled down on that. And admittedly, and kind of shamelessly on Twitter, I basically was pointing out that, you know, hey, I kind of wrote this yesterday, but not in the column, but on Twitter, I used the word hellbent, and then it just went crazy because that's human nature, right? Like if you use strong verbology like that, it's going to get a reaction. And it's been a really interesting story to cover because, you know, I 100% stand by the reporting at that time and the idea that Paul was telling the Pacers, telling everybody around him, and I'm talking like, I like Paul a lot. I've never really heard about it. I mean, he shares his desires, his hopes, and dreams with a lot of people, and everybody was saying Lakers, Lakers, Lakers. The elephant in the room is he did not know that they would trade him to this team with Russ. He did not know that they were going to go get Carmelo Anthony, and that's a game changer. So it's been really interesting, like you said, Eric, to be the guy reporting that at the time. And then now to just update it and say, well, here's where we are.
Yeah, because the quotes in your story, you know, he talks about winning and he talks about how, you know, adamant he is in putting that first in his career. And I just think that I go into these situations with athletes as how much of what you say on a daily basis am I going to take for face value? Like these guys say these things
all
the time.
Good point, yeah.
And I just don't know what to make of Paul George because I haven't spent enough time around him yet. I haven't talked to the people around him enough yet. I just know from just talking to you, talking to a couple of different reporters, you know, Candace Buckner, Nate Taylor, who had experience with him. But I think it's interesting. I think it's interesting that, you know, Paul George is saying the right things right now, and he's probably gassing a lot of people up into thinking that, you know, this guy has a possibility of coming back here.
He is. I mean, I would say, I mean, and hopefully this gets across, I mean, you guys have such a good following of Thunder fans. It's just, it's how he feels right now. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It can change. That's all there is to it. Like, I know Thunder fans are getting excited. You could argue, oh, should he get them excited? Here's the different, unique thing about Paul George to me. I was in Las Vegas the night that he broke his leg. I watched it happen. I'll be honest with you, one of the worst moments of my career, just in terms of, like, shock value. I'll never forget standing next to Nick Friedell of ESPN, sitting there talking during the game, and I happened, like, I wish this wasn't the case. I'm not trying to be melodramatic, but I looked down and I saw, instead of everybody else who watched it on the replay, I happened to be looking directly at Paul when it happened. And like, I'll never forget, everybody in the gym was going to their laptops to go review the play to see how bad it was. And I just sat there kind of in my own little world. Like, I knew how bad it was because I saw it all slow down for me and I saw his leg do what it did. My point is that when you've been through something like that as an athlete like Paul, and we talked about this, this is a shameless plug. We the podcast coming out on Tuesday with a whole interview with Paul where he talks about how that changes the way everything hits you. So even if you get Thunder fans' hopes up and, you know, and then ultimately change your mind, and it's not to sound callous, but he's just kind of living his life. The guy saw his career flash before his eyes, and he does, I think, a really good job of, for the most part, disconnecting from the social media stuff, which is obviously a real contrast to the guy who he's unofficially replacing with Kevin Durant being real tuned in.
Does he use Twitter?
Yes, he does. He's a Twitteria is what they call it. And, you know, I think that Paul just, he's going to do his thing. But I was surprised by the degree to which he was willing to go all in on OKC, you know, the comments he was making. I could see this being a place that I call home for years. I could see us winning multiple championships, and I'm paraphrasing, but that's what he said. Now, if you want to, you got to break down the situation a little bit to realize also, though, that he's in a very convenient place, I think, PR-wise, because if Russell Westbrook decides he doesn't want to be here anymore, Paul's off the hook. Like, nothing he said now matters. You know what I mean? So there are other moving parts that he cannot control that will factor into his decision.
What did you go fishing with him?
No, I should have. I really want to.
Yeah.
I showed him. Here's a funny story. I'm gonna out myself on your guys' pod. This will be fun. You know how like you're in a conversation and you got to just dumb down. you know, the point that you're making, and you can't get stuck in the minutia. I was talking to Paul about fishing, and I thought it would be fun to show him a picture of a fish that I was involved in catching a few weeks prior. I thought it would muddy it down, or muddy the waters, if I shared the fact that it was actually the guy I was with who caught it.
Right.
So I am guilty of showing Paul a picture of a fish and alleging that I caught it and I didn't actually catch it.
It's a fishtail.
Yes,
what?
It's a
fishtail. That's exactly what it is.
It's an actual fishtail. Like a literal.
I even, this is how far I went. I was sitting in his living room. We were about to connect. And I even like cropped the picture to like get the other guy out of the picture. Just to focus
like in the
on
moment,
the fish.
You're like sitting there. Like,
I just want to see his reaction to the fish. I'm going to pull it up here.
I'm pretty sure Paul George listens to the Thunder Buddies podcast.
Hey,
so.
Paul? Surely. Don't judge.
Yeah, when he hears this tomorrow, he's going to feel deceived.
I got skunked.
He's
going
to feel deceived, and he's probably going to leave Oklahoma City because Sam Amick lied to him.
Everybody blames
Sam. Hold on a minute. Where is it here? I got to find it. Yeah, I got skunked, and I didn't want to own it. There it is. Like, you notice how just it's just random white hand.
Yeah, and there's no telling if that's your hand or it could be anybody's hand. Was that actually your hand?
No.
Did you allege to Paul George that it was your hand, or did you just not?
I said this is a fish. Isn't that a beauty?
Lie of omission.
Yeah. He just assumes that you caught said fish.
Here's the original.
That is like a full on picture of that dude.
Yeah.
It is his whole body, his entire body, and you have cropped it down to just
that
the
dude,
fish and his hand.
That dude listens to the Thunder
But does
Buddies
it count
podcast.
that he let me take the fish home? Like, does that make it mine?
No, you didn't catch
it.
I guess it makes it yours.
Yeah.
Makes it yours.
We're going to eat this fish. It's in my house.
Okay.
It's still in my freezer.
I mean, that doesn't mean that you caught it. I drove my car off the lot. I didn't build it. You know.
Check out this sweet segue. The Thunder caught a big fish. Carmelo Anthony.
Well, heyo.
Look at that.
Although I talked about this analogy today because I kind of wrote that. I forget who I was talking to.
We were talking about this on the floor before.
It's a terrible parallel because when you catch a big fish, they die. I don't think, you know, we forget about the conclusion of.
And you can't really say they caught him and let him go.
Well, if you let him go, that means. Wow. He's in the waters with everybody else.
What if they bought a fish and just put it in its tank, and just had a tank of wonderful exotic fish?
We're getting loose here.
We're getting loose. Yeah. Sam, I wanted to ask you about the Carmelo trade, the Hoodie Melo arrival.
Oh my gosh.
How long have these guys been working on this?
The deal?
Yeah. And I mean that from a Thunder standpoint. Their interest in him, and I mean that from a Westbrook George standpoint.
I don't know. I don't know the answer. I think we'll learn more in the coming days. I talked to Melo today twice, kind of away from the fray, and like the first time was social stuff, President Trump, with some strong comments about him. The second time was, Eric, your exact question of when did this happen, and I specifically said, we all reported that your list changed 2 days ago. Was that the case, or was OKC involved much earlier? The truth is I need to go back and look at my transcription. I haven't used this stuff yet, but he indicated that it was, you know, Houston was there and then Houston wasn't there and then Cleveland, they couldn't get anything done there. And that OKC, you know, I guess the answer is that OKC popped up much earlier, but on the fringes, and it was there. But then I think mostly like it's been reported, I think it just happened over the weekend. I can tell you even from, you know, again, just being honest, like the Presti story I shared earlier, like Sam had indicated when I was coming in for this road trip that he would probably have all kinds of time to say hello during the weekend. And that scheduling changed very quickly.
Yeah, and it seemed like Carmelo – what he said, which kind of threw me off because, I mean, obviously he has the no trade clause. But, like, at the same time, he was like, it happened so quickly, I had to make a quick decision. So maybe this was something that presented itself to the Knicks earlier, but they couldn't come to terms on which players were going where or something like that.
There was, like, a list, and then there was the unofficial list. Like, I was, you know, the Knicks told me that Portland – was a viable option, even though it was not officially on the list. And so I think you had this fluid conversation with Melo and his people. And to me, like Portland and OKC are interesting to kind of compare because you know, I mean, this would have been a huge deal for Portland if they could have found a way to get Melo, and the Thunder got it done. But I think it was, I think it's safe to say, it's not that it was second tier in terms of being second class citizen, but there's not, I mean, the Knicks didn't want Ryan Anderson with the Rockets, mm-hmm. and it's a non-starter, and the Cavs did not want to give up their 2018 Brooklyn first round pick. And then beyond that, it's extremely tough to get to the money with the Cavs. And so the pieces just didn't fit nearly as well as they did here. I mean, the, you know, to go McDermott and Cantor, I mean, Ennis's contract was huge in this thing. I mean, that was a key, is you just got to get to the money. You got to make the puzzle pieces work. And if you're Melo, you want to win. That is one thing he and I talked about today. I said, you left $8 million on the table. Why'd you do it? And, you know, it's not exactly shocking, breaking story here, but it was just winning has become his number one priority. He's 33. He knows father time is ticking.
He's tired of playing on trash teams.
Right.
It's interesting today, in talking to those guys, you could sort of piece a little bit together that there was some awareness that something might be happening. Paul George talked about them having a conversation, not just in the past on the Olympic team, but having some degree of conversation over the weekend. What I thought was interesting was that what Carmelo said about Russell Westbrook, which sort of plays to what we all think about Westbrook. I asked Melo about the degree to which those guys convinced him to come here, and he said, Russ don't really do the convincing.
Right.
You know, and that's been the sort of thing. They have a relationship that predates all of this. But even Westbrook said that it was more about that. It was more their pre-existing relationship than it was anything that happened now.
But isn't it funny, too? This group's going to be interesting to follow because, to piggyback on your point, Brett, when I talked to Paul at his house, he went out of his way to kind of yield to Russ and say that Russ has more of a relationship with Melo than I do. You know, Melo was almost indicating that in terms of direct communication, Paul had a bigger impact. You're going to, you know, this is what smart guys do, is how do we get all these egos in the same room? And that is, I think they're crazy talented. I think they're going to be really good. They are going to, I mean, I'm trying to think if this is an accurate statement. They're going to be the most nitpicked team in the NBA, I think, in terms of overanalyzing of chemistry, of relationships, things like that, because Melo, if he was 37, you just tell Melo to step aside and do however you can help. That's great. He's not. He's 33, and you saw even today on the podium.
Oh, yeah.
That he went out of his way to say, what do? I score. Yeah. That's what I'm paid to do.
Come here to be a rebounder.
Yeah. Right. You know, and so Russ is going to have to find a way to rewire from last season, and we'll see if it works.
And you have three guys, I think, that are unique in the sense that they're three of the most, I think, heavily scrutinized guys in terms of their game since they've been in the league. I mean, particularly Melo and Russell Westbrook. You know, Russell's always had this perception, this outward perception, I think, from people that he's selfish, which I don't see to be true at all. And then Melo has this perception of selfishness because of the, you know, his wanting to go to New York a year before he went to free agency and then getting the money that he wanted to get. And then Paul George has had these comments over the past year of being the guy who wants to take the last shot. And he really doesn't have a track record of being a guy who can make that last shot. So you've got three unique personalities, I think, and three guys that are not unfamiliar with having criticism.
Yeah, the last shot thing is going to be fascinating. I mean, it's really, really interesting because Westbrook had a historically great year doing it last year. He had one of the best years you could have in terms of the way he played in those last few minutes. And Melo has had some great success doing that and also some stretches of not having it. And as you mentioned, Paul George has had not a ton of great success. It's going to be interesting to see who's going to defer there and how they're going to play. And then, you know, I think the Melo at power forward thing is also really interesting. The fact that Melo today
is not coming off the bench.
Yeah. Yeah. The idea that Melo said,
all right, yeah, I'll take the hit on that one. Look,
I love that question. He did. And I love that response.
I'm getting roasted. Tony Jones texted me. He's like, I've got one thing for you. Don't ever ask Melo a stupid question like that. And I'm like, look, I'm trying to explain to Tony Jones, who I love, by the way. Thanks, Tony, big brother. Like, it wasn't Patrick Patterson's better than Melo or somebody should be starting over Melo question. It was a question of strategic substitutions and such. But when you think about it.
But how great that Paul happened to walk by right then.
Yeah.
It's great.
Like, hey, P.
That whole thing was great. The whole was like, that's a classic media day.
There were
day
some
moment.
Good media day moments today.
Very, very
Russ
good.
On fashion
yeah.
was where, really
where
good. Where you been?
Yeah, it was great.
Nervous Russ, we talked about.
Yeah. Very good. Some lingering questions, some rather long questions in a couple of situations.
I wouldn't even call them questions.
Yeah,
I just call them stories.
Yeah.
Thunder story time.
Yeah, those were interesting. But the who me was great. Like, I like the idea. I said this the first day. I love the idea of Melo as bench player. It's never going to happen. He wouldn't go for it. I don't think he would waive a no trade clause to come here and come off the bench. I love it just because I like the idea of Melo as a small forward some.
Yeah.
And I think that's what he would like to do, ideally, in a like sort of perfect world, and he could do it in that situation. They're not going to do it, obviously. But he said, Sam, I got a lot of Twitter responses, a lot of kind of eye rolling from people with Melo saying, I like to play the four. I think it'll be better for me. A lot of New York people thinking
sure. Maybe
he doesn't like it quite so much as he said today.
But the game has changed
yeah. From
a couple of years ago when he was getting asked to play the four.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows that. You have a no trade clause. If you didn't want to play the four, you don't.
Right.
You know, you don't come here. Yeah. You know the deal. I mean,
if
it's.
You don't want to give up shots. You don't come here.
It'll be, and that's, but we've been dying to see, you know, this version of Melo at this point in his career. And I'm interested to talk to him even more about, as a guy in your mid 30s, the thought process of finally deciding that, you know, I'm only going to play for so long. And so sacrifice is going to come into play. And the synergy could be there. Paul George and the way he frames his story and his situation and the idea that, like the other day during our conversation, it really got my attention when he highlighted the fact that he had not won a championship in high school or college. Now, I felt stupid for one because I hadn't done my homework and realized that. You know, I mean, I didn't know that I had to go back and check Knight High School in Palmdale, California to see if they actually won a title. They did not. Fresno State, they did not. Indiana Pacers get to the conference finals twice. But it really resonated with me because just from a human standpoint, like if you competed in sports as a young guy, it's kind of a bummer. Like, oh, I've never won a title. Well, imagine now you're 27 and you're one of the best players on the planet. And yes, you have more money than you ever thought you'd make in your whole life, but I really want to win, you know, and that's really how he's looking at it. And that's where this whole thing is so compelling going into next summer, because the Lakers thing looked like, I mean, my God, guys, we've had free agents who hinted that they might want to play here or there, but the Lakers got fined $500,000 for like essentially getting the intel that he wanted to play there. This is a very substantive story. And then in no short time, he's now kind of swinging it back the other way.
Yeah. If that's what he's really doing, which, you know, and as you said, it's the moment.
He is, because right, you can't. He's off the hook, to go back to our fishing analogy, because you can't speak to so many things. Is Lonzo Ball any good? Is LeBron going to come?
I heard he's better than Melo. That was the rank. That was the ESPN
list.
ESPN rank.
One list.
And he's going to bust Steph Curry all year long, too.
I've also heard that. I've heard a lot of things about him.
I mean, like, there's all these things he can't speak to. Like, next summer, if they get on the phone in the same fashion that they got on the phone to get Melo to OKC, if they all get on the phone and it's, okay, we're going to do LeBron, Russ, Paul, and, you know, somebody's going to come in on the cheap, we're going to get DeMarcus, well, then it's a wrap. Like, he's not going to say no to that.
Right.
But you can't speak to those things right now.
Here's another little question for the Thunder buddy listeners out there, who I'm sure dying to know. Dwayne Wade, you know, he's the guy that gets bought out. He's open market now. Reports of Cleveland, Houston. Is Houston in there?
San Antonio, Miami.
San Antonio.
The other two, Oklahoma City Thunder. Are out there.
You know, Cleveland, you would imagine, is a favorite because of the LeBron James connection. We thought that with Carmelo Anthony, too, when it came to Houston and Cleveland. But just to, I guess, kind of appease to the Thunder fans out there, what are the chances of a Dwayne Wade to Thunder reunion? Not reunion. What the hell am I saying, reunion?
Those were some good, some good years.
It's been a really long day. Like,
man, remember D. Wade in 2009?
Oh, man, that was
Thunder Heat.
That was great. That Dwayne Wade, Russell Westbrook backcourt was just devastating. No, that did not happen. I'm sorry, folks.
I don't know the answer to that, but I don't know if you guys picked up on this. At Sam's press conference, he's not usually very revealing.
That was interesting.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying. Like, he ended his thing with, sometimes these things get decided in advance.
Beforehand, yeah.
I'm going to combine that with friend and colleague Joe Varden of the Cleveland Plain Dealer reporting that a source close to LeBron says that ultimately he will, the D-Wade will choose Cleveland. Yeah. And these guys obviously run in very close circles. So, you know, I'm handicapping Cleveland. I felt like Sam was kind of admitting that that ship had sailed, but we'll see.
I thought the same thing. And I wrote that's probably what he was alluding to when he mentioned that. It's also very unusual for Presti just to say we'll go through the process with that. We'll check on that. We'll call the people that you call. That's a little more forward, a little more forthcoming than he normally is with a thing like that. I was surprised at how bluntly he answered it, but I thought that was kind of the takeaway. This idea that, because if he's saying that about if he's saying there is a team out there, if he's suggesting there is a team out there that it might already be a done deal, that you would think Cleveland is the one.
I just think that in terms of the optics, and if you jump inside, you try to read Dwayne Wade's mind, I feel like that's where you would have the most fun, because anybody who watches social media, like he and LeBron they're like best friends. They're so close.
Yep.
And they are, you know, I think D-Wade's got a lot of respect for LeBron and where he's at, and the idea that, all right, buddy, Kyrie's going to bail on you, Isaiah's hurt. Like there's almost kind of a sense of, I'm going to come help you. That's not. I think that's more of a pull than Carmelo, as tight as you are with him, and Paul George saying, you know, come help the rich get richer. Like, that's kind of what this would be. LeBron needs some help right now. You know, I've been debating with my colleague Jeff Zilgit. We did a podcast this morning where, you know, he thinks the Cavs are still head and shoulders above the Celtics. I don't. You know, I think it's at least it's close, and at most Boston's just better. And, you know, I think D-Wade, even in his advanced age, would help them.
Yeah, the fit here is a little odd because I think the way they've constructed their lineup, it makes a lot of sense. It just makes sense to start Andre Robertson. It just makes sense for him to be out there. Paul George talked about that today. They were pretty honest about the idea of, like, the goal with those two guys is you let Melo do what he does. And it wasn't understated. He basically said, don't make him play too much defense. Don't make him chase little guys around and do things like that. So they take a load off Carmelo defensively with those two guys. It's a little weird if you move Wade into that spot over Robertson. Wade's not a good three-point shooter. If you bring him off the bench, if he was willing to do that, you cut into some of those Abrines minutes, a guy who is a good shooter and who I think they're committed to kind of developing here. You'd take Dwayne Wade because he's a great player. But for me, it's Cleveland's way less complicated from that standpoint, too. It just makes sense. Go plug him in and play.
Right.
And to me, like, an Andre Robertson off the bench isn't nearly as effective because you want him starting on starters. And him coming off the bench, you're like, okay, we're going to lock up the second unit.
Not only that, but you're saying, hey, could you give us a few points?
Yeah,
you
know, that like, too. Yeah. He's not going to give you anything.
Right.
Yeah.
No, it's different. He's a luxury in the starting lineup that I think there's a compounding interest element to what he does in that group.
Yeah, which was why he was so effective when he had Kevin and Serge and Russell, and those three guys could handle the offense, and Andre could just run around and, you know, make up for those guys not playing, wanting to play defense.
I mean, sometimes. I heard your guys' last conversation, and it's like Andre and Russ, both the hope, if you're Billy Donovan, would be, you know, both those guys elevating their game defensively and changing. I mean, first of all, elite defensive team already, but maybe they get even better with those guys individually. Because of this mix, and then what were they? Was it 17th in points per 100 in scoring?
I think so. Yeah, yeah. They were 17th in offensive rating, and then they were 10th in defensive rating.
Yeah. I think. So I mean, that's why we're talking about them. I mean, I kind of already love the debate about Western Conference elite power rankings because it's really interesting. I mean, Houston, San Antonio, OKC, all in the same mix, you know. But then from there, Minnesota, Clippers. Portland. I mean, it's going to be a very different West than it was before.
You asked us yesterday at the airport on...
Yeah, that's right.
Was it Snapchat? Was it Instagram? I don't remember. It was
Weibo.
Something technological. You asked us if we thought...
The Chinese audience.
If we thought it was... Cyberdust? What was the Mark Cuban?
It was Cyberdust,
thing?
Yeah.
Just ask us if we thought that they were the number two team in the West. Now, what do you think about it? I don't remember if you answered that question.
I didn't. Okay. I kind of didn't want to answer.
You questioned it, everybody, and didn't answer it yourself. That's
right. All right. So if we're like, we got to answer. Spurs, Thunder, Rockets, that's the group. Here's my problem. I'm going to stall. I have this like belief in this thing that I always go back to that I get mad when everybody overhypes super teams that we have not seen, because more often than not, they take longer than we anticipated to gel. And the problem with this is that you're basically asking me to pick between three teams, two of which are super teams that we have not seen. I mean, Houston was already really good. They get Chris Paul. The Spurs, like, I don't really want to pick them as number two because Tony Parker's hurt, and I know he's not the same guy, but I don't know what to think of DeJounte Murray leading that team. And what's the other factor I'm forgetting?
They're the Spurs. Is that one of the factors?
I know, but, I mean, Kawhi's amazing, yeah. But LaMarcus is miserable.
Yeah.
Like that's, and I mean,
pop
but,
is pop.
But we tend to take the last thing we've seen of these guys and apply it to them. Like, how many games did the Spurs win last year?
61.
Like, LaMarcus Aldridge is a perfectly fine.
I know, and I
regular season starting.
I'm gonna hit the rewind button. I don't want to like wind up on some blog like going all in on LaMarcus and miserable. Late.
Yeah, see, we don't have to worry about that kind of stuff.
I'm just
you
saying.
Have to worry about.
I
that.
Wrote. I mean, I have written, you know, and I certainly like stand behind it that. After the playoffs, he was very frustrated, not only in the system, but the way I think he essentially felt like a fall guy. You know, Pop was pretty tough on him in press conferences. He did not show up when Kawhi got hurt. My only point of bringing any of that up is I've not gotten an updated perspective on that situation. And I think it's obviously either one of two things. The Spurs smoothed it over, and I used this line the other day to somebody. It's like Star Wars. Where they just wave the hand and say, no, you're fine. You're not unhappy anymore. And life goes on because it's the Spurs. You can do that. Or it has a ripple effect on the locker room and the team. I don't know. But I, for whatever reason, it's tugging at me that I don't want to just say Spurs number two. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe it's the shiny Rockets and the Thunder. But that's a really long-winded way of saying I'd probably pick OKC number two. I think it's close, but it would not shock me. I mean, I have a lot of individual faith in Paul George's game and Carmelo Anthony in this role. A lot of individual, and I think with Russ, we've seen what Russ can do with, you know, superstar elite talent. And I don't care what you say about Kevin leaving any of that. He and Kevin were the best dynamic duo in the entire NBA. We've seen his ability to give up some of his space for another guy.
I'm going to stick with the Spurs at two because they're the Spurs. And I think that LaMarcus Aldridge is a perfectly capable regular season starting power forward. Now, when you get in those playoff series, and I think he can kind of deteriorate in words again. But I think Houston and the Thunder are going to be right there with each other the entire season. I think they're going to be really close in terms of record.
Yeah.
And it's going to be interesting to watch how that series goes on because I think they're both teams that are really tight in terms of the standings.
I wasn't uncomfortable with the idea of them as the two before Melo. I didn't think necessarily I would have picked it that way, but I wasn't uncomfortable with the thought that they could end up being that, just Paul George and Westbrook and what they could do defensively and how switchy they were and all the kinds of things they could do, all the things that were kind of open to Billy Donovan. I think Melo opens up even some more things. So I would pick them second right now. If we pick finishing order, I'll probably pick them second, but you're going to convince me, if you're going to argue that it's the Rockets or the Spurs, I'm not going to be like, oh, no, it's impossible.
Right.
No
you chance. Know what I love about this whole conversation with the West and some of the stars involved is, like, maybe I'm showing my age, but I'm coming in on the back end of my 30s, and, like, I can relate. The part I can't relate to is your career arc ending at 40. But, like, you get a sense of – I love where a lot of these guys are at life-wise. And you talk about motivation and hunger – like, Chris Paul is just dying to get farther. You know what I mean? Like, his willpower in the playoffs, to whatever degree that sort of, you know, unquantifiable factor can impact a guy's play, like, that's going to be at a very high level. Same thing with Paul George. I know he's only 27, but again, he saw one of his limbs snap in half and the career flash before his eyes. That's a game changer. You know, Melo being older, being 33. The Spurs are a little bit different to me. I mean, Kawhi is just an absolute beast. And then we talked about LaMarcus. But I love that part that I'm going to spin the conversation this way. That's where I think it's interesting for the Warriors because they do, to at least a small degree, I think, run the risk of checking themselves and making sure that they're hungry because, you know, you get two titles in 3 years. And even Durant, you get one. You know, like, we've already seen distractions this summer, the shoe contract stuff, you know, things like that. I think that the Warriors will have to fight against some of that stuff And then all around them, they have these superstars and these teams that are just crazy hungry to get after it.
I had this conversation with Sekou Smith from NBA.com a while back after the first wave of things had sort of settled down about this idea. It is interesting, this idea that, like, everybody sort of concedes the Warriors are better than everybody else, and yet, particularly in the West and to a degree in the East, it didn't stop anybody from saying, like, let's push in. We're going to push all the chips in and see what happens, particularly in the West. I mean, look at what Minnesota went out and did, which is a team that's far, far down the pecking order from the Warriors, but still said, let's do it. Let's see what we can do. And that's fun that the league isn't just getting out of their way.
I agree 100%. I mean, Daryl Morey of the Rockets had called it, you know, an arms race in the West. And, I mean, the cool part is it's not just the teams at the top. I mean, Minnesota doing Jimmy Butler.
Denver.
Yeah, and Denver too. I mean, getting Millsap, you know, they're going to be fun. That's the, you know, this is for the geeks among us. We do this every single day. Like, I'm fired up about the second half of the West, like Portland and Denver. I want to, like, with Portland, seeing Yusuf Nurkic full season with the Blazers for the first time, they were, correct me if I'm wrong, like, I remember writing, like, the best winning percentage in the West in the second half.
Really good. They were really good. They were a very good team once they got
there. They made the Thunder look bad.
Yeah. Oh,
a couple times.
It happens all the time in Portland. Yeah. Were you there once, weren't you? Were you there for a Portland?
OKC game?
Yeah.
Maybe in Portland?
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah.
I think so. I think you were.
Probably just for the off-the-record pale ale after
exactly.
After
yeah,
games.
I think we had one of those.
Shout out Jim Taylor.
I've never been to Portland.
It's the best. You gotta go this year. Yeah, we gotta swap that out.
I gotta do Portland. This is like media insider stuff. They give you, in the old days, they'd have more press rooms with beer after the game. Portland, it's off the record. I probably shouldn't even be talking about
it.
It's like Fight Club.
I think I've actually talked about it on the podcast before, though. I think we talked. I went to Salt Lake from. Did you do that too? Did you go to Salt Lake?
I did. You're right. Yeah. You just hit the head. Yeah.
So I was on. I think I did the podcast from Salt Lake.
Gotcha.
I talked about the.
But they give you tickets. Everybody gets two tickets to make sure you don't drink too much. But it's like a little system.
Yeah, and it's a beer for. It's for the press room. It's like made by a local.
And it's
place,
good.
And
it's good beer.
It's just for the.
Yeah,
for
I
the
did Westbrook. Room. It was trying futilely to capture the fact that he didn't take nights off. So it was a back to back. In Portland and Utah with Russ at that time, like halfway through the year, chasing the triple-double mark.
Yeah, that was the triple-double bleep. I'm getting tired of the triple-double bleep.
Yeah, remember that game in Utah? It was like one of his worst of the whole year.
Yep. Yeah, they were bad.
That was a bad road trip.
It was. Oladipo was out. They were, oh.
Oh, yeah, that was the, oof. Yeah, I'm glad I didn't get to go down that one.
They weren't good at
that
all.
That was the night he got into the little, he threw the ball toward the.
In Portland. Yep, that was his first weird ball throwing incidents last year.
What a very strange road trip.
You know, the other thing about you're talking about the bottom half of the West, and I have a little bias because I was there for a year, but I'm fascinated by New Orleans. I don't know if they're going to be any good, but like, I want to see it. If it goes off the rails, I want to watch it go off the rails.
Well, and this is a probably different pod, but we kind of alluded the other day, we were talking about the greater ramifications of the Pelicans organization. It's always been really tough for them to make a buck in that market and to keep attendance up, and they've got a real special opportunity with Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins and Drew Holiday and, you know, and Alvin Gentry. I think certainly going into the year, job security is a question. He's going to have to do some good work, but if it doesn't work and if they, worst case scenario, lose those kinds of superstars as far as AD and DeMarcus, you know, it's, I kind of shudder to think what it might mean for the franchise.
Yeah,
they're in a precarious situation too, but hey, if Alvin Gentry gets fired, as we've said on the podcast multiple times before,
come on
down to Oklahoma City.
Just give him whatever job he wants. Just anything. Like designated media talk.
The Gentry
guy.
Fan club. Okay, yeah.
He's fantastic. He can come out and talk for Billy. If Billy just wants to like be like, I'm going to take today off,
we'll just
send Alvin out and let him talk. Fine.
Yeah. Right. You know, the Phoenix Suns used to have Steve Kerr as a GM and Alvin Gentry as a coach. Like, that might be the most loquacious, media-friendly GM-coach combination
combo,
in the history of the NBA.
And also, Brett, I think you told this story multiple times before that Alvin Gentry called Russell Westbrook angry black man.
Angry black man.
Did he really?
Yeah. He tells that story all the time. I called him that, I think, the All-Star game.
Who tells that story all the time?
Gentry. That he called him angry black man. And Russell Westbrook said, why do you always call me that? And Gentry said, because that's the way you are. That's the way you present yourself.
He can get away with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's Alvin Gentry.
We can't.
Yeah. He is crazy.
I'm not saying it. Yeah. I'm not calling him that.
I mean, I'm black and I can't say it. Russell just wouldn't talk to me for 2 months. This has happened.
I heard that's happened before.
Oh, yeah.
That's the thing we were alluding to, right?
Anyway, Sam, thanks for coming on with us. Do you have any final thoughts for the pod today, tonight?
No, I need to map out my schedule and figure out when I'm coming in next. It very quickly went from, you know, even with Paul, Paul's a huge story, so it was like, I got to get out there. But the urgency to get out here again was not quite at the same level that it is now, so I'm going to have to scour the schedule. I mean, it might be, maybe I got to do that Knicks game, the season opener.
I mean,
but
the people,
they're going to be must-see TV.
Yeah, I mean, Enes Kanter's return is really, it's yes, a really big story.
Who are the other opening night games that night?
Cleveland and Boston play, don't they?
They played that
night. No, wait, is that night, it's, or is that, the, opener night? Is that like earlier?
Is the opening night on Thursday?
No, I think it's no, the TNT opening night game is Tuesday.
It's a Thursday game.
Yeah,
but it's like, you couldn't have written this stuff any better.
It's almost like the league is fixed.
Easy now. Adam is listening.
I know.
Almost like we're freezing up.
He might.
David Stern's listening.
I don't know if he listens, but somebody probably listens for him. You know,
it's almost like we're freezing envelopes over here or something. Conspiracy Theory 101. Welcome to the Conspiracy Theory Podcast.
I don't really think
you're shocked why I can't get credentialed anymore.
Yeah. Oh, well, I can't go to Madison Square Garden anymore. Me and Charles Oakley. Anyway, thanks for joining us on the Thunder Buddies podcast today.
Thanks for having me, boys.
Thanks for having us in this. I'm going to stop talking. It's been a long day.
It has. They're all going to be long days.
Give the people what they want.
Be long days.
Thunder Buddy. Is there like a mascot? A Thunder Buddy mascot? I think you need
nope.
I think you need like a plush doll.
Is Darnell the mascot?
You need a plush doll. We need some posters
Tim
in
Bontemps
here.
Tim Bontemps is our
Tim
mascot.
Bontemps is the Thunder Buddy mascot.
Nice.
He's the.
It's not actually Tim Bontemps. It's like a guy with a big Tim Bontemps head. You know, it's like a like a mascot, but it looks like Tim Bontemps.
All right, we will
Thanks,
see
boys.
You all later.